It's 88.5 KCSN. Sky Daniels, happy to welcome Ryan Adams to the performance studio. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you. I'm happy to be welcomed.
It's good to see you. As many of our listeners know, Ryan supported KCSN in one of our benefit concerts at the neighboring Valley Performing Arts Center, and for that we're perpetually indebted. And I still have the thing you wrote on your song list on my wall. I'll show you that after we talk today.
Nice.
You're going to be playing with The Shining and NAFF. We'll talk about NAFF as well.
Cool.
Santa Barbara Bowl tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And then The Greek on Friday night. And I told you that as a former meteorologist, I anticipate a beautiful summer evening at both venues.
That's wonderful. Do you anticipate some ballads moving in from the east?
Yes, a strong chance of ballads moving in, and perhaps some rockers coming in from the west.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's about a 60-40 mix, depending on the barometric pressure.
Exactly.
But who knows? You've been... I guess I want to start by asking this. Is the recording studio your favorite place in life?
Mm.
Or is it just a place you spend most time in?
I mean, I really like it there, and I certainly would have said that probably up until the last maybe couple of months. But I've been in the studio for so long, you know, working on stuff and writing, and I have my own studio. And there, you know, I think having your own studio, your own analog studio, is a specific kind of. Are you allowed to say ass on the air?
Yeah.
It's a specific kind of pain in the ass. Something is usually always kind of breaking, but it's a cool thing that's broken that you have to fix or whatever. And also it's kind of a discipline, you know? It's like if you do kung fu, you need like a dojo. So it's that sort of vibe. I think if I didn't go, I would be really bored. And I don't know what I would be getting into. But yeah, I love it. I love writing songs. I can make a song or cover a song really poorly anytime. I've done it a lot.
You had to catch the very poorly. He kind of stuck that one in there. You know, you have to that point. The evolution of you as a songwriter and a performer. Can you see any limitations? To kinds of music, genres of music, idioms, styles, where you might not consider going, that would think wasn't, quote, authentic. And I know authentic's a slippery slope to start to talk about, but you really have a voracious and wide appetite for music, and you've displayed it throughout the years. Are there any styles where, that's not Ryan Adams?
I mean...
I guess as a performer, I mean, liking and listening to, that's
no, I think
one
it's
thing.
A really good question. I mean, there's a lot of different parts of my brain activated by that question, and I'm not sure which one to answer first. But the way I look at it is there's really no pressure to not experiment with music or not try to cover a song. I think it would feel very weird. It would sort of be like... For me, an equivalent would be, let's say if there was a painter, and this painter was a realist, but had saw, like, you know, post-expressionist painting for the first time. Well, one of the ways that you understand that is by putting the pen or paintbrush to the canvas and just feeling what it's like to make those shapes. And there's something to that, you know. There's something interesting in that. And I think it's something that most musicians, I mean, at least the ones that I know, and maybe it's just because of where I'm from, but it's something that you do anyway. Like, you kind of go like, oh, wow. Like, I mean, I've probably spent my whole life and will spend the rest of my life going, what the hell is Johnny Marr doing in that part? And it could be any song. And it's usually he's doing two or three things and I'll never figure it out completely. And I mean, who knows? Maybe he doesn't know anymore, but that's the sort of stuff that makes me love the craft and the fact that I get moved by it. But I, you know, I don't know what it is or how it works with me in this way, but it went from sort of being who I am, maybe being sort of sheltered early on in my career from, you know, just getting really wasted a lot to sort of conceal a shyness or to protect myself from sort of the vibe of other people, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like to me, musically, and maybe in life, everybody was out to do something or overanalyze or put a purpose on stuff. And I just saw chaos everywhere. I literally just saw this sort of universe adrift and pure chaos, coded chaos. And that always kind of terrified me. And then later on, as I sort of settled down and got older, I just remember thinking, well, I don't really have a point. And if I cover a song or something, it's going to sound just like me because I'm only me.
Right.
So what is the information like when I feel it or say it? Or will something happen like a magical spell? If I say this, what will happen? And sometimes it's really terrible. And stuff does happen. It's like I play it and I go, oh, that's really awful. And I wish I had never learned that. But then other times I'll learn it and I'll go, wow, like a, you know, a D minor sounds really interesting really quickly into like a major and E major, like just those little nuances that maybe I would have never thought of, you know, because it wasn't the way I played.
You've recently talked about the stuff you are working on, and you acknowledge the fact that a lot of times it's not in the original creation or the original inspiration, but sometimes in retrospect, after you've laid down, you know, X amount of takes on a song, that suddenly you're discovering some of the purpose, the meaning, the significance of those songs. And sometimes it's like a revelation, like, oh, that's what I'm feeling when this song.
Yeah. You know, it's like, it's funny you say that. I like woke up this morning and I sent Don Was this email, but I sent it because it was this thing in my mind and I couldn't relay it in another way. But the gist of one of the parts of the email about something that we were talking about is that I had spent my entire life figuring out that I was just trying to get back to being exactly who I was before I started trying to figure out who I was musically. And
a lot of effort into getting, quote, normal.
Yeah, like all this effort to figure out like that I really just was like kind of, you know, fascinated with these, like a simple chord or these sort of purposeful ideas that could be sort of bent a little bit, you know, in their meaning or could be playful without meaning to, you know, it's like, it's that thing. It's like when you listen to the first couple Black Sabbath records, like Ozzy's kind of funny. Like people forget that sometimes he's sort of funny. Like they're like, you have to catch it because it's quick and it's playful, but they don't know what they're doing. And that's why that stuff is so heavy and so rad. And it's like, not that to take anything away from their newer stuff either, because, you know, they're also discovering themselves as they are now, you know. But I love that. I love the idea of saying that there's some journey to actually unspooling yourself so that you could just get down to, like, you know, like the raw wood that was holding the string of what you thought you were, you know.
Well, that let's take, you know, because in conversation you easily will jump from a 30s blues singer into a 70s metal artist and have the same degree of reverence and engagement with them all. I assume that I'm going to make an assumption that you're an avid record collector.
I mean, sometimes. I mean, I think I'm stuck in a pattern of kinds of records that I like. I mean, I'm very much stuck in still trying to listen to all of and figure out certain records that seem to almost all of them be from the 80s and all of them be anything from deep 80s metal to like Songs from the Big Chair by Tears for Fears or stuff, or, you know, like Once Upon a Time, Simple Minds, or things like that. Like I'll just listen to them over and over again and go, what is going on there? And then sometimes I'll even go, why do I like this so much? Like, what is happening?
Well, is that like teenage connection to those things, or?
Well, like possibly, but I think that if you were to listen to the record, even though I don't know if I like it, this is another interesting thing, is that I don't know if I like Yes, Big Generator. I don't know. But I know that, like, I run. Like, it's just, like, something I do to keep myself healthy and you know, and I do it almost every day if I can. And I'll listen to that record, and I'll go, what the hell is going on in this record, like, sonically? And I don't know. And certainly they might not have known. And it sounds to me like, it sounds to me so modern or so postmodern or so thoughtful that there's just information in the idea of trying to understand it.
Yeah.
That I'll go home and play guitar and accidentally write what will end up sounding like a folk song, but only because it's just the inspiration of questioning it has sort of spawned that thing. And also there's something now, and it's not a bad thing. I think that we've moved into a digital age of recording, and that's the way that it is, and that's the way things are, and people edit and edit takes and edit performances and time and all kinds of things. It's just the way that it is. But you know, if you listen to like Joy Division Substance and listen to just like what's happening sonically with this band.
Right.
It's so tremendously still the future. And they were using stuff that would be so primal to most people. I mean, they didn't right click anything to make that. And it still to me sounds like this terrifying future. but you know, there's a lot of sort of sonic similarities in digital recording that I don't fully understand yet. I think that's because maybe I don't understand the form of it, you know, the idea that you could summon EQs and effects and stuff all like an app inside of a program, basically. And I've seen people use it masterfully and make amazing stuff, and you know, and I use it or have been around it, and it's really cool. But sometimes I go like, it's hard for me to look at that and go like, how is this not Tempest? How is this not playing like Atari Tempest or something? Or it's like, well, you can press all these buttons. So what's to stop you from doing that? Nothing. You'll do it. But if you were sitting in front of a API and you had a couple compressors and a reverb tank, you pretty much would have to look to the band for them to make anything from like Love Will Tear Us Apart to like Jailhouse Rock. Like you can't dial that up.
Right.
Which is fascinating to me. But I mean, equally fascinating is the sort of, you know, the sort of gigantic Marshmallow Man monster that is the sort of digitized pop sort of monster. And now it's in rock and it's in everywhere. It's kind of,
it's everything like, is a solid file. There's no shape to any of the waveforms that you see anymore. They're just a block.
But people kind of used to suck. Like, I mean, it's a really interesting thing to say it, but like it's like now it's like that with the, I mean you can listen to an entire song, and if you go a little flat or something, or someone's singing a little too emotively, they would fix it. And like the other day, like I think like I was listening to the radio at night. I was driving in LA, and a U2 song was on, and then an REM song came on, which was pretty interesting for me. And in both songs, I remember going like, wow, there's a couple of moments in both of those songs where I'm pretty sure like the vocal got kind of a little out. And in my mind instantly, I was like, someone would have right-clicked on that like now, and they would have fixed it. And I was like, sucking as being a human being is now like sucking. It's like you suck. Like it's like you're not. It's like you can't.
It was live. It was, well, that's what we.
That was.
That's
the best
what
thing.
We got.
Yeah, which is pretty interesting. So, but yeah, it's like kind of a. So for me, like when I, you know, going back to records, like I think for me, like I sort of seek out music. Like I'm very interested in, you know, the darkest, most harrowing metal stuff I can find, because I don't know why, but listening to it is like watching like The Exorcist or something. It's like a or like Nightmare on Elm Street. It's like a thrill ride musically for me. But then at the same time, I love Faré, and I love to just sort of peace out and go into like gardening fantasy world, you know, my brain. And but rarely do I listen to songwriters. And
really?
Which is really weird. But I think maybe it's because I got to that point where I was like, I had filled my toolbox of songwriting up with so many different kinds of chisels and hammers and things, you know, that I sort of felt like I really shouldn't put any more information in there if I can help it, so that I could, you know, just... So it's like if I have a feeling or if I have something that needs to be done, there's an acoustic guitar in the room for it. I don't need to... I rarely need to go find solos.
Do you ever, you know, oftentimes when I talk to artists who are in the middle of recording, when they hit, you know, when they hit the wall, when they just don't feel like they're getting the proverbial it, sometimes they have an idea of where they're trying to go in song, and they go and they check out some of their favorite songs that are similar, or they use them as reference points. Do you ever do that, or do you avoid that?
If I ever get, if I ever start to think that I did something great, like I'm hot shit or something, like I will go listen to Blackwaterside by Bert. I always say Bert Jansch. I don't know how to say his last name.
That's pretty close.
But is it like Jansch? I don't know how they say it.
Jansch. Yeah, that's the Midwest guy, the way I say it. So yeah. Don't go by mine.
I remember the first time I looked at his name, I was like, I'm going to really love this musician that I'm never going to be able to say his name right. It just totally sucks. But like, but just listening to him do that song or Needle of Death, I'll always be so mystified that I'll go, right, I suck. Like, which is fine.
But it tethers you right back to where,
yeah,
it's where like, you should be, right yeah, sizes.
Yeah, because there's so much mythology in that playing. You could really feel that energy. And obviously, like Pentacle, when he was in that band, the playing that's happening there is so out of control. They were truly, like, what is that music? I don't think anyone will ever really know how, I mean, it's sort of transformative in that way. Like, people talk about, like, listening to The Doors or seeing The Doors live or The Grateful Dead and having these really super crazy experiences. And in my mind, I'm always like, well, that must be the English equivalent for a lot of people.
It's the mysticism.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of playing, do you feel inspired enough to play a song now?
Sure. Yeah,
what absolutely. Do you have in mind?
I'm going to play Sweet Carolina just because that's how I feel today.
That's what we want. It's Ryan Adams on KCSN.
Well, I went down to Houston and stopped in San Antonio. I passed up the station for the bus. Was trying to find me something, but I wasn't sure just what. Man, I ended up with pockets full of dust. So I went on to Cleveland. I ended up insane. I bought a borrowed suit and learned to dance. And I was spending money like the way it likes to rain. Lord, I ended up with pockets full. Oh, my sweet Carolina, what compels me to go? Oh, my sweet disposition, may you one day carry me. I ain't never been to Vegas, but I've gambled up my life. Building newsprint boats, I raced to Superman. Was trying to find me something, but I wasn't sure just what. Funny how they say that some things never change. Oh, my sweet Carolina,
what compels me to go? Oh, my sweet disposition, may you one day carry me home. You will up here in the city, feels like things are closing in. The sunset's just my light bulb burning now. Well, I miss Kentucky and I miss my family. All the sweetest winds blow across the south. Oh, my sweet what compels me to go? Oh, my sweet disposition, may you one day carry me home. May you one day carry me
Adams live on 88.5 KCSN. You know, I can borrow a line from that song to ask the next question. What compels you to go? As you approach making a record, because you have made different kinds of records, and, you know, some would say you're a chameleon when it comes to some of your stylistic choices. Beyond whatever external expectations of, oh, what kind of Ryan Adams record is this going to be? What you know, inspires you to say, all right, I think I have a collection of songs here. I think I have an idea for an album. This is becoming an album. And I guess more specifically, you've been at work on new material. When do you know you've got it? If ever.
When my manager stops yelling at me.
Oh, well, there's one. That's why. And knowing your manager, that's infrequent.
No, seriously. You know, basically, I don't know if I do know because they haven't stopped. I mean, I have actively tried to stop writing, and I can't.
Hmm.
They happen. But it happens in a different way. You know, the chameleon part is interesting because I feel like in the very beginning of my career when I was in Whiskeytown,
right.
I think because I was a young man and I was still a new musician. And I guess it's not ironic to say that when I first started playing music, the very first thing that I did was I wrote my own songs. I didn't learn anyone else's songs, and I had a tuning that made sense to me because I didn't know how to play a tuned guitar. And it turned out to be like an open D or E kind of tuning where you just basically would just slide your fingers up, you know, up the neck and would make these sort of open kind of, it sort of sounded like if you've heard Sonic Youth Daydream Nation, it kind of, everything sort of sounded like that. Yeah. Like I could get into some of those zones, but maybe without the technique. And so I started in this sort of weird way. And then I had a band that did that for a while. I slowly but surely learned to play a tuned guitar, but that's because I fell madly in love with like REM and the Feelies and, you know, the Reavers. Like I just loved it. Like any band that did, you know, the sort of the arpeggiations, they just moved me so much, you know? And then I did that for a while and I was sort of trying to find my identity in that kind of music. And then the band that I had that's where I, that was a three-piece broke up, which was due to the fact that, you know, I had moved to Raleigh, and the bass player who was in that band, he was someone that I knew in my hometown of Jacksonville. He had moved to Raleigh, and we played with this drummer, Brian, and Brian was very dramatic, and I was just this, you know, sort of hot-headed, you know, young dude washing dishes, roofing, plumbing, whatever I could to make some money to live, and we didn't get along all the time, and so that band broke up, and I wanted to do a band that sounded like the Cowboy Junkies, Trinity Sessions, and an American Music Club, and I wanted to find something that was rootsy, and it was right around the time that, you know, some of those bands were starting to kind of come out of the woodwork. And I mean, they had been there. Rank and File was there, and you know, if you went searching, you know, some of those sounds were already starting to happen. You know, Jason and the Scorchers, people talk about them, and then Uncle Tupelo or Jayhawk's first record. There was this sort of softer sound that kind of had the REM vibe, but went further, went a little closer to country stuff.
Right.
And I remember thinking, that sound, if I could combine it with like Yola Tango Fake Book and the Trinity Sessions, I would find my sound. It was like I was sure of it, and found some musicians, and we started playing, and you know, I didn't find the sound. I really didn't at all.
Some would argue that you made at least a very earnest attempt at it.
Totally. It's that thing, though. It's that thing of being a young man where it's, you know, I feel like I was getting, you know, I was writing songs that didn't mean, like, they mattered to someone, but I don't know what they were about, and I may not have known then, and that might have been this force field that I was putting around myself, because that's what you do, you know, like, when you find the tough guy or the drunk younger guy with a chip on his shoulder, there's usually like some kind of there's a facade there, and there's some shield of like, well, you're not going to know the real me. And I always hear that when I listen to those records. But I can see trace elements. I see sort of what I was trying to get at. And, you know, it's funny because for someone that now writes music all the time or stays busy all the time or does all that, like I really... I either really just enjoyed playing but not finishing anything, or really did have like attention deficit disorder. Like a lot of that stuff really isn't finished. I think that was a tough thing, and I think that was probably hard for people who worked with me at the time. They were probably like, this kid has talent, but there's really no second verse or bridge, and if there's a bridge, it's, you know, it's not going to make any sense.
What was the breakthrough? You were talking about something that's interesting, in that you were almost, you were writing songs, while they might have even been first person songs, you were somewhat distanced from them, so they weren't truly a first person narrative of sorts. Where was the breakthrough where you finally had the confidence that I'm going to put exactly what I'm feeling inside of me, and I'm going to find a way to articulate that in song? Where do you feel along the line that started to happen for you?
Well, you know, I think that maybe the first time that I really knew to be very real, although I was becoming real before Heartbreaker at the end of Whiskey Town, I was in a relationship. And at the end of this relationship, not only was I losing my relationship, which just had played out, and I was broke, and the label I was on had gotten purchased by this gin company or something, and I wasn't allowed to make a new record, but I wasn't allowed to...
It was a spirits company, but yes, yeah. I get the reference.
Yeah, so it was a very strange time. It was the end of the 90s, and I had made a final Whiskey Town record that I couldn't release, and yet I was not allowed to contractually, I don't believe, to go then just make a record outside of that either. So I was frozen in time. There was nothing I could do. And so I was already pretty poor because we were horrible live. Whiskeytown was truly one of the worst live bands of all time. And anyone that says any different, they were drunker than we were, and they were remembering something that didn't happen. It was truly, truly bad. It was just seriously just horrible.
I'm recalling Whiskeytown live reviews in my head.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
To your point,
it was worse than anything anyone wrote. You know, you would have had to have written the review in something like in sulfur, so that the review itself like repulsed you. It was just really bad, and it was mainly my fault. But that's what happens when you pass out in the middle of your own concert.
The replacements sort of followed that logic for a while, didn't they?
See, that's interesting because I feel like that they were sort of being. I was reading the book about them recently, and there was a masterfulness in the way that there was an elegance in how they did it because they were genius, and the music was genius, and the alliterations and the similes and the idioms were all very prevalent and ready to be consumed by anyone who had a heart or a brain, especially those with people with a hotline between the two of them. But for me, I hadn't really made that leap. I don't think I had become in any way an intellectual that was capable of conveying who I was on paper or through music. And so for me, it was just pure rampant alcoholism, like matched with very mediocre guitar skills, which is so funny because I was really good at anything I wanted to be good at. Like I was a really, really good plumber. You think I could have just sat down and just practiced the guitar a couple hours a day, but I just couldn't. I couldn't be bothered to do it.
But it's obvious, at least to me, and I'm sure to many others, and I won't even speak to the scores of other artists that I've known. They have minds that they're self-talking minds. They're minds that are always thinking, always analyzing, always feeling. Seeing too much, feeling too much, and when they try to get a singular focus, it's tough because they allow so much, to come in. It's all in there, You want me to just focus on a single idea? I've got 25 different thoughts going on at the same time. It's difficult. And you mentioned alcoholism. There's a lot of there's references, in recovery of the committee in the head and all these other things. A lot of artists come with a very busy mind. And
truly, yeah.
And sometimes the songs end up being the quieting force. Because they figure, if I can get this out in song, and if it's comprehensive, and it's somewhat, if I've communicated it properly, that's what I intended to say.
That's so interesting. I think I only became some person worthy of being listened to, at least by my own self, or considered, or wrote something that I would consider to be a song where about me or enough of me where it's mixed with maybe something I read or something to where I could say, okay, I agree with this. This is, this is something I could put next to or with or somewhere in the vicinity of a finished song, that's okay, would have been when life forced me to slow down, enough to actually absorb the pain or the intellectual discomfort that I was feeling, enough that it could permeate me and interrupt my running from myself and running from others. That's sort of who I... It could interrupt even, just the... getting wasted and listening to Big Star is awesome. It really is. It just is. Headphones on, lying on your back, looking at the stars, and you're just letting those tunes, just tear through you. That's a beautiful thing. But life will interrupt that. And if it can, and you're a guitar player, there's a good chance that, it's almost like life is giving you the opportunity of saying, I caught you when you weren't looking, and now what's going to happen? And I feel like maybe sometimes toward the end of Whiskey Town and the beginning of when I started to make solo records, that's what happened. I kind of didn't have a choice. I had lost so much. I lost my recording contract. I didn't have any money. I had a really stable, awesome girlfriend, and I managed to screw that up, you know. And I lived in, you know, I was like, I live in New York City. This is amazing. And all of a sudden, it was like, actually, I don't. I can't afford to live here. That was gone. That was a lot to absorb.
Yeah.
I remember driving away, looking at the back window of the van, my buddy's van, who he drove up to get me. I didn't fly out or anything, you know. I had to just leave and see the city get smaller. Yeah, and get smaller and smaller. And I was like, man, this is humbling and like a very new.
That's
way.
Not the storybook ending that I saw, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I guess the whole time it's so funny because, you know, I never felt like that was my story anyway. I remember going like thinking. I remember wishing during the time of Whiskey Town when Stranger's Almanac was finished and people were interested in it. I remember secretly making these almost like esoteric wishes of going like, please do not be something. Because I remember thinking like, I don't want to do this.
This is my thing.
Yeah. I don't even know what these songs are about. I don't know what, I just did this because it made the other people happy around me and, you know, we had something to do. But it's really truly humbling when you're kind of like, wow, okay, that's not what I wanted, but that was nice, and now it's nothing. It's a lot.
And so when the proverbial, you ain't got nothing much to lose. So when you hit that point of, all right, what am I going to make that's real? There's still... You know, and you had a nice, funny reference to the record industry and the influences that they always permeate onto artists. Now I got to assume, I'm assuming again, maybe I assume too much in this conversation, that you're at a point where it would appear that you're going to make the music you want to make, and the inspiration is going to be some that you and you alone decide. That's just my take on. Would you agree that maybe that there's a period where you were a feisty guy?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I think I still am.
Okay,
but I mean, it, because I about art,
right?
About art. I mean, because it's
right.
it's
protective.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, I guess because the way that I look at it is. You know, I certainly have suffered my own consequences of actions to be the person that this is what I do, you know, for a living. And then, but also, there's a huge insignificance to my career that is not lost on me, and it's the beautiful part.
Hmm.
Like I am an unnoticed person. Like it's very different. Like I make songs. They're very much about me or what's happening with me, very self-consciously so, in the same way that maybe that book by Henry Miller, Friends,
right,
is extremely see-through because he's just writing about his friends in Brooklyn. And that's a huge sacrifice to make, but also the audience for that would not be, if you're a songwriter, at least for me or the way that I've done it, like I would never expect... Or I have not expected ever for it to be more than that, and so with that comes this idea of going like, I think maybe in the past more so, where I might have been like, well, I don't want to do that other stuff because, you know, because what will it do? And then the couple of times that I think that I've maybe gotten into places of uncomfortability or whatever, I think something happens when you buy that first Danzig solo record and you're like an acoustic singer-songwriter. Like you basically like, you kind of...
Yeah, there's like, something not, different, right?
Yeah, you're like, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm not gonna, you know... But I mean, I suppose that maybe some of that also was because I was smart enough or dumb enough to think that I was going to fail anyway. So why not? why not fail with extra time to write songs? Do you know what I mean? Like, why not make a record that's, you know, I mean, that's been the other thing with me too. I remember before before things were MP3s, before that's the way that most people got music.
Right.
People used to say, even contemporaries of mine used to say, like, you know what your problem is? Like, you have too many records. And I used to think, what does that mean? Like, I didn't mean to make that. I just did. And I used to think, well, like, thank God they don't know about the, like, other 100 songs that weren't on that one record. That
if they're
was
holding
part
me
of
accountable for what's actually out in the marketplace, yeesh.
Yeah.
They haven't seen the archives yet.
Yeah. But, you know, everyone has their own speed and their own pace. And, you know, I was at LACMA the other day. And I was walking through there, and we were looking at the Agnes Martin exhibit. It was really interesting that there's a period in her paintings where she just stopped. But I had never really read too much about how or in what way the process of her work was. But basically, like, she was summoned to New York City, and she lived in New Mexico, I think. But they're like, you have to come to New York, because anyone lives there. So this person that's used to living out sort of in the desert and the sun and making stuff with these crazy textiles and natural fabrics and colors and probably making their own dyes is in city. And I used to think, well, it's probably hard to make your own textiles, like, on the Bowery, like in some little apartment.
It's really hard to find your own textiles on the Bowery.
Yeah, I mean, well, at least in the way that she was before,
right.
or sun bleaching things or whatever. And then there was this period where nothing happened, where she just dropped out. And that's the part, I guess, where she just sort of went, like, I'm out of here, and went and moved back to New Mexico and moved even further off the grid. And then in the exhibit, they show in this new period of her work, she shows the examples of what she's going to do, which would be revolutionary. And for a minute, I was like, this has got to, like, what? And it was just sheets of paper, and they just had, like, tic-tac-toe grids on them. That's it. With a very fine line. And like, I was looking at it, and I was like, this person has gone crazy. Like, I mean,
well, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, it's like, well, like, in my mind, I was like, this has already been simplistic, but now what? And then you go into the next room, and that was the sketch for these huge pieces that were like tic-tac-toe grids that were so light that they looked kind of like if you had a fever and you were lying on your couch and you were staring out your window and let's say the blinds are down and you could just see the tree line through it, that gauzy light. That's probably a lot harder to paint than people realize. And she had made these huge grids out of them. And so, you know, first you sit there and think this is ridiculous, and then the next thing you know, you're like, oh my God.
It's mesmerizing.
Unbelievable. And then there's this predictive change that happens right before she passes away, where all of these really light, playful colors turn very dark gray with sort of a black grid or some kind of a black shape, and then just a all-black painting with what looks almost like Morse code lines across it. Still very feminine, very faint, very light, very touching. It was mesmerizing. And I remember thinking to myself, like, how did somebody ever look at this stuff? It must have been very confusing for anyone to look at this and go, wait, is this painting done? You know, is this really what you wanted? But that simplicity, it had taken this person a lifetime to go, I can make a painting look like you have a fever and you're staring out a window, and it's going to make you feel something. But the context is what mattered. I figure if I could ever learn how to do that with music, I'll have done my job.
Well, why don't you try to play a song now that evokes some emotion from our audience? There's a challenge. There's a gauntlet we just threw down, isn't it?
Well, if nothing, they might feel some boredom.
Well, if that's what you're going for, we'll take it. It's Ryan Adams live on 88.5 KCSN. Thank you.
tall. My mind is so blank, so I'm going for a walk. I got nothing left to say. I can't see. It's the darkness on the rise. I'll be waiting here till the end of time. All my life been shaking, wanting something, holding everything I had like it was broken. Give me something good, give me something good, give me something, give me something good, give me something good. I was playing dead, didn't make a sound, holding my breath, going underground. So I can't talk, I got nothing left to say. It's like there's no tomorrow, barely yesterday. All my life been shaking, wanting something, holding everything I had like it was broken. Give me something good, give me something good, give me something, give me something good, give me something good, give me something good, give me something good, give me something good. All my life been shaking, wanting something, holding everybody back, demanding ransom. Give me something good, give me something good, give me something, give me something good, give me something good, give me something good, give me something good, give me something.
Ryan Adams live on 88.5 KCSN, an example of how songs can be interpreted in many different ways performing live. And Ryan will be performing with The Shining at the Santa Barbara Bowl tomorrow night and at the Greek Theater on Friday night. How is, you know, I've read that there's a comfort level with The Shining you have in performing now. Talk about how they've, you know, bring some of your songs to life with you on stage as opposed to in the studio. Because I know the nucleus of the band has been part of studio efforts you've done. But now we're talking about getting out there in front of the crowds and making the songs work.
They're just nerds. Like, they're all of them, like, authentic, total nerds. It's very much like being in the Goonies for me. You know, like Charlie's Data, you know what I mean? Like, I'm probably Mouth. Like, there's definitely, like, that vibe. But they really are, all of them, adult nerds, whether they mean to be or not, you know? Daniel is always threatening, like, he's always threatening us when he's going to wear shorts on stage. And I'm just like, wear shorts? Like, what? What's the problem? Like, it's so fun.
With high socks?
Yeah,
that's bold.
No, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's just, and there's just a humor. It's always funny. And then there's a thing where it's kind of like, despite whatever our records might be, I think there's a general sort of collective thing where every person in the band has a lot of different kinds of records, but probably all of us meet in the middle someplace around Kiss or The Replacements or stuff like that. But then, you know, in our own ways, there's, you know, Daniel loves like a lot of crazy jazz and soul music, and Mike's like super into like Big Star and pop stuff that I'll never even know what it is, and Freddie's into like a bunch of metal, and he's like wicked at playing like Merciful Fate sounding beats, and you know, nobody knows what Charlie does. Like, we think he might be in the CIA or something. We're still, you know, there's no way to know. And so it's there's just a general feeling up there of also it's strange. It's the first time I've ever played my music where it doesn't really still feel like it's mine. I know what my gig is up there, and I'm in that band, but I'm fully in that band, and it's kind of it's strange to say, but it's like they're not covers of me covering myself. Whereas it's like we'll play like Dear Chicago, and we'll do our own version of it, and it's our version sounds a little bit like I'm on Fire by Bruce Springsteen. Like, that was the idea, so we'll do that version, and I'll be in the middle of it, and it'll happen a couple of times a show, but I'll always be like, wow, like, I can't believe I'm playing this right now. Or the feeling of what's happening will always be new to me. And that's the best thing that you can feel on stage. I mean, you don't want to be out there going like, oh my God, how long before I can get off the stage? That's the last thing you want to think. And for me, it's like the show ends and I'm always like, man, like that was over too fast.
You're just getting going.
Yeah. For real. I mean, the sort of interpretive parts, the jammier parts that probably came over, that thinking came over from my time with the Cardinals and from my time of playing with Phil Lesh and, you know, exposure to the Dead and stuff. It's like that part, and then the early parts of my career, with the parts of Whiskey Town that had Big Star in it, that's there now. And whether they're there in the recordings of the songs when we play live, we just put them back in. Because it's cool, because why not? And I love the fact that we don't have a steel player. It's, you know, like pedal steel is something that I was in love with and still am in a lot of ways, and I used it for so long. But I found this liberation from being away from slide instruments and being in Daniel's zone. Daniel can use a B3 or Hammond or synths and make things so soulful, and the next minute it's very Back to the Future sounding soundtrack-ish, or accidental, like Huey Lewis and the Bad News. You know, there's a lot of vibes instantly, and it's just funny. It's just it's always a gift. It's like our worst shows are still the best.
And having caught a couple of your sound checks, the selections, there have been jaw-dropping selections I've heard at sound check where I'm like, get out.
Well, that's our thing. It's like, we have The Shining also is a couple other different bands. But one of the bands that we are is this band called Boast Gusters. And the thing is like, I don't know how to play a lot of like very big songs, like popular songs. Like, I don't really know how to play any Beatles songs, like from front to back or just many songs. And so as a thing, the band will challenge me in the moment to like try to play a song from front to back that's something I don't know. And we just make the weirdest version that's ever that you can make in the moment. And they're just totally absurd. And that kind of stuff happens usually at our sound checks. Like, we're supposed to be sound checking something that we know, but instead we're doing like the worst version of Helter Skelter that's like ever happened, like ever on earth.
Well, that's for perhaps an encore in the future.
Maybe.
Well, you're going to be playing tomorrow at the Santa Barbara Bowl and at the Greek on Friday, and NAF, as we call them on the air, is going to be playing with you. And obviously you've got relationships with the members of that band. You've worked closely with Jenny. It must be fun to have friends up doing support for you on these gigs.
Totally. She's like PacSam fam to us, you know, like, so I'm stoked. You know, I've seen some footage and like the photos of like what's going on with their live thing, and it's going to be new for us, and we're so stoked. And it's also cool that she kind of just was like, I'm going to be out of here and I'm going to create this whole new band out of nowhere. That just, it's like a happening or something. Like, I don't know. I'm not surprised, but I'm pleasantly surprised that happened. And of course Jenny did that, because that's her brain, you know. She's she can make something happen, you know. She can make a party happen.
Well, before we let you leave, would you mind doing one last song to
sure.
You know, what's in your heart right now as you get ready to do live shows and also, you know, you've got this challenge of you're doing live shows and you got a record you're working on that you've been working hard on. What does those feelings that start to mount producing a song right now?
I don't know. You've caught me off guard.
Ah, good. Disarmed.
I could just make up something. Today when we were driving into KCSN, the street that you know entering, it was a huge mess, concrete everywhere. Supposed to be tickets waiting for us at the parking booth, but I could see in. The lady inside was having lunch. The sign said, I'll be back in 15 minutes. I just sat there in my car. Some old dude behind me got mad. Started honking his horn, started waving his arms, rolling down his window. Thought he was gonna throw his fishing hat at me. But I just sat right there because I'm the alt-country Danzig. Once you try to fix your main plumbing line, they tell you it's just gonna be a month, but you know it's gonna be a long ass time. You're gonna try to do something nice with those pipes. You're gonna find yourself in a fix. Pooping into porcelain stuff is more complicated than this. Oh, where do I begin? KCSN. Oh, where do I begin? Where do I begin? I didn't used to write bridges, but I'll write one in this song, because I was talking about how I never did. This is the bridge to the song that I'm making up on the radio when I was sitting here feeling slightly challenged.
Talk about asking and receiving. We certainly got that, didn't we? It's been fun, as well as at times we went places, didn't we, this afternoon?
Absolutely. I think next time we should just discuss the entire record, Lick It Up by Kiss. Because there's a lot of weird information in that record that's worthy of being discussed.
Well, we'll get together, we'll spin it a few times, and we'll come in fully informed.
It's only right now.
All right. It's Ryan Adams. Obviously, we encourage all of our fans both out to the west. The Santa Barbara Bowl will be beautiful tomorrow night and on Friday night, the Greek Theater. It's Ryan Adams and The Shining. It's also NAF going to be performing, so it's reasons to get there early. And good luck on what is becoming a record you said is the hardest record you've ever worked on. So keep working.
I'm going to keep working. Tell me to break a leg, though.
Break a leg, man.
Thank you.
All right. It's Ryan Adams live on KCSN.